Welcome back to The Brandon White Show, where we have conversations worth listening to give you an edge to win in your business and your life. I'm your host, Brandon White. Here we go. Christy, thanks for joining us today. I'm excited to have you here. I was really interested in finding out that there's actually a company, because possibly society has eroded so much that you can build a business around teaching etiquette and manners.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are surprised at that, but you would also be surprised at some of the situations that people find themselves in at work and that they're asking for guidance on. And really, it's just some of those, you might call them old-fashioned etiquette rules, but some of those still really come into play today. And etiquette has changed a whole lot since we really were first introduced to it in a business setting and social settings.
Well, thanks. Just for listeners, I should say Christy is from The Polite Company, and you do coaching, consulting, seminars, workshops. So for anyone, and we'll give all that information at the end of the show, Christy. But yeah, so how has, when you say things have changed, are there like a few things that jump out at you right away? One of the things I'll tell you that jumped out at me that puts maybe people like me who, I hate to say trained, but we're brought up to hold door for a woman, not wear a hat inside, just some basics that now it's almost as if you have to flinch, because if you hold the door for a woman, I'm not doing that out of any derogatory saying that you're anything less, just like, hey, that was the polite thing. I'm not even saying that it's right or maybe it should change, but what is wrong with that? So you're like, oh my God. And if you don't, and that person does still have that framework, then you're considered rude. So it's like you're in this no-win position.
I know. That's how it feels a lot of times. But what I will say is that we're definitely becoming more informal as a society. So I don't necessarily want to say we're being more rude, but we're definitely less formal. And you might think it's crazy that I think this, but that's a great thing, because when you do know manners, you have the opportunity to stand out a whole lot more easily than you did when everyone was doing those same things and taking their hats off and opening the doors for people. So, you know, I am an optimist by nature. And so, you know, I look at that and I was like, gosh, dang it. That's great. We're more informal now. It's easier to stick out in a positive way by knowing how to dress, knowing what fork to use, knowing how you start an email. All of those kinds of things, really just little things, can really put you ahead.
So how do you determine? Well, let's just use I keep going back to the door, but it's true, because I've been corrected, especially online, a few times. I'll give you another example, but besides the door, I said something. We had a lady who was an entrepreneur who, I'm not saying I promote more or less, but I grew up with a single mom. So I inherently understand that it can be more difficult for women to do that. And I think we should celebrate and highlight those things. So I wrote a title that said Lady Entrepreneur or something of that. I posted it on LinkedIn and I basically got demolished by this group who said, why are you singling us out and identifying that we're women? Like, we're just entrepreneurs. And I didn't do that I was doing that more to celebrate. So it's the same thing whether you open the door for someone, right? And a woman's like, well, why would you do that? You male chauvinist pig. It's like, so I mean, it's one of those things where it's really, really tough. I don't disagree with you that we've become more informal. Although coming from the East Coast, I still see the format. Living in California for sure, but in the East Coast, I don't think as much. So what's your advice to people? Like, how do you deal with that? Or,
right, when it comes to gender issues at work, what I teach people is that gender at work it's even. So when it comes to holding the door for a woman, absolutely do that. But a woman holds it for a man holds it for a man, woman holds it for a woman. One safe thing that you can do is you can always say, hey, can I get the door for you? And that gives the person the opportunity to say, yes, that's great, or not. But really, we try to say in work relationships and in a business sense, we try to forget gender roles. Now, that's different in social situations, but generally in business, you're safer just to avoid any of the gender roles at all.
That's tough, because are women now taught to hold the door for men?
I think that I teach that. I teach no matter who you are, hold the door for the person behind you. And I think that, you know, that's a good thing to do. Again, when you're out to eat in a networking or a business situation, unless you're going to hold the chair out for every single person, you don't hold it out for one particular person. So really, we have to think in those business situations, we're just going to not be gender specific in those manners.
How do you feel about that? Like, I mean, we come from a long, I'm not saying history's always right, but we do come from a long place where that was taught. Yeah. How do you feel about that?
I think gender is changing, and it is not, the old rules don't necessarily apply. And I think that you show a certain awareness when you kind of change what you normally would have done or would have said. And I think that a lot of us, that was inherent that somebody should open the door for us. But then I think when you're in a work situation, I came from a heavily male dominated industry before I started this industry, which is heavily female dominated. And I think that I appreciate that, because I didn't want to be a woman doing my job. You know, I wanted to be the person who was doing my job. And so for me, it's a little bit easier to reconcile, and it's easier to keep it straight because it's the same for everybody.
Well, how's that work? Should a woman run? If a man is walking through the door first, should the woman who's behind the man run to open the door for them?
I think whoever gets there first, and then, you know, there's always that kind of little pause of, if are they close enough to hold the door for them, or is it going to be that awkward holding the door? But, you know, I mean, somebody's 4 or 5 paces behind you, you hit the door first and you open it for the next person.
Yeah, you can see that I'm trying to figure this out, because it seems confusing to me how that works. And if you, not war game, but if you do war game this, and you basically get to a place where manners almost cease to exist, because you're scared that if you do something, then you could be criticized or be held accountable in some way that you didn't meet. The intent wasn't that, right? It was something else. So basically everyone starts doing nothing.
Well, or we all step it up and we start doing more than we were before. So I talk to people about bringing some of the humanity back to emails. You don't start your email with XYZ, period, no closing, any of those things. But it's the same for everyone, you know, and I mean, a polite greeting and a polite ending, coming to work and saying hello to the people around you, getting on the virtual meeting and not being your hair a mess and, you know, eating your cereal in front of your coworkers.
I actually had that happen.
I think I have seen everything on a Zoom meeting that could possibly.
Had that happen. This guy actually went and got his cereal while we were on the call with SportsCenter in the background.
Yeah. So you were just, you know, really had a window into his normal day-to-day world that you probably didn't really want to have.
It's not really appropriate. I was reading your website and some of your blog posts and some other stuff about you. And there's all these words. There's manners, there's etiquette, and then there's polite.
Mm-hmm.
Are they interchangeable? Are they the same? Are they slightly different? Etiquette seems like a rule book or a rules that you would follow. Polite just seems to treat humans as humans, and manners almost feels like etiquette in that sense.
Yeah. So etiquette is really that set of principles that we use to guide what we're doing. And in the way that I've learned etiquette is those principles are consideration, respect, and honesty. So those are the kind of the set of guiding things that overarching is the word etiquette. And manners are those individual rules that we follow. So saying hello when you answer the phone, knowing how to respond to an email, knowing to RSVP, those are individual manners. Manners are also the things that we expect others to do. So when I stick out my hand to shake your hand and you put yours out, those are manners. And then when we talk about polite, I think that's just a way to just an adjective for our actions. And so whether they're polite or impolite. And I think that as long as everything is kind of infused with the intent to be polite and to have good etiquette, I think the words can be used fairly interchangeably. But for those of us who geek out when it comes to etiquette, there are a few little caveats and definitions to them.
So can we go through some examples of the workplace? You've mentioned email, and maybe we can go through some other ones that you, like the top obvious ones that you would say, hey, are going to cover 80% in the workplace these days. But email is an interesting thing because some people do use email almost as an asynchronous chat in the sense that the conversations happen. So saying hi and hello every time and whatever, however you sign your thing can get old. And I think we're so inundated with email. And this is not new. I've heard this conversation for 20 years, right? We get too much email. I've got too much email. Everybody says that, but nothing's ever changed and it's not probably going to change anytime soon. And so what I tend to suggest for people, at least in our companies, is if you send an email, write up front what the email's about. So I'm asking you a question, Christy, or I need you a response, or no response necessary. This is for your information only. And I guess I would consider that manners on email in the sense that you're being respectful to other people's time versus, hey, Christy, you should listen to this podcast. And you're like, what am I listening for? Why am I listening? Like, and doing that sort of stuff. So let's take email. How do you address that for the workplace in general?
I think, you know, your idea about being specific up front is really great. So when I'm, you know, giving tips on how to write an email, I tell people, you know, write your email. And the first email that you have with the person at the beginning of the day or the first time you broach a subject with somebody, that's when you put in the, hello, Brandon. Hope you're having a good day. XYZ. Talk to you soon, Christy. Those subsequent emails that come after that don't need to go through that formality. And in fact, I would say there's a little danger if it does, because you get kind of that saccharine, sweet, fake, you know, I mean, we want to be real in these things. So I think the first email of the day, or when you're starting about a new subject, you'd put that salutation, you put the greeting in there. The next thing I tell people to do is then look, and AI is a helper for this, but you know, you look at that subject and you try to make that subject as definitive and, you know, as simple as you can. And then the last thing I tell people to do is put the person's address in there. Sometimes if we do that first, we're apt to hit respond before we necessarily want to hit respond, or we don't take the time to make sure that we're actually sending it to the right person. So, who hasn't done that? I mean, it's possible. So it just kind of gives you an extra step. And it kind of changes the pattern that we have. And so I think it makes us think a little bit more about what we're doing. Sometimes we don't know the perfect subject to put in there until we've written the email.
As you were talking, I was wondering, do you think companies should publish their own book of etiquette? Because as I'm thinking about even our episode here, we're trying to suggest general things for people. But I'm thinking of a case. I just had a friend who is going to, I think he got the job, but I won't say his name or the company so it doesn't matter, but the company is based here in Silicon Valley, and the overarching company that owns that company, technology company, is an East Coast based company. And the East Coast based company still wears a jacket, and I don't know if they ditched the tie or not, but apparently they didn't. So they still wear a jacket, a tie, and pants, and whatever the equivalent for women is in their workplace. And the West Coast company, obviously, goes to work in jeans, a t-shirt, and I hesitate to say flip-flops, but those of us who live on the coast probably could show up with that or Vans. So, and when he went to the West Coast, he had to go to the West Coast to do an interview. He wore a jacket. We were talking about it on a bike ride. He's like, what should we do? And we actually surveyed several people. And the consensus was, and what he went with was, got to wear the jacket, the tie, the shirt. We wore a suit. And because that would be polite or respectful or whatever it is. So a company like that may need to actually publish a book of etiquette. And that's just part of the diligence that a person would do to work for that company, because it's so hard to figure all these things out, I guess, as I'm struggling with talking to you. It's when I read about you, I was like, oh, I get to have Christy on the show. I can ask her all these questions and I can figure out what I'm going to do. But what do you think about that idea?
I, of course, 100% for that. And I think that I give the example of expressing gratitude. And so if I go to buy a car from somebody, I can go to different dealerships. And each of those places, if I decide to buy the car from them, are probably going to reach out and be in gratitude in different ways. But I know if I'm going to go to Jaguar, what that experience is going to be. And I would love to go to Jaguar at some point, but I know what that experience is going to be. And it's consistent. And that's part of the brand. And I think that every company should have that. So when we do have somebody who's bought from us, or we do want to send a thank, how do we send that thank you note? Do we text it? Do we send it in a card? Do we email it? You know, what are the words that we use when we answer the phone? How do we answer the phone? What are those things? I mean, I think that a company that has that consistency is going to gain loyal customers. And I think that etiquette has so much to do with that. And setting some best practices in place is so important, because we all come from a different house. We all come from a different background. No one has the same idea of what's polite, what's a thank you, as everybody else. And so, or what is business casual, and, you know, what is business formal? So I think for people, and especially for younger people who are entering the workforce, we need to be explicit about that.
Yeah, this is almost becoming, it's great for your business, because you're basically writing a book of etiquette, and you could publish something like that online, so that, because I think that's probably, it's probably a lot of the anxiety that I'm expressing to you. And there's probably, you see that, I imagine, just people just have general anxiety at all, because the world changes, which it changes all the time. And you're so scared to do something or say something wrong that actually inhibits you in being able to do your job well. So if everybody said, hey, this is how we operate, this is what we expect on Zoom calls, this is what we don't come with a t-shirt, instead of just letting it free for all. And maybe this just crept up on us in general, may not have been from the pandemic or anything. It may just have been society has moved that fast with the age of the internet and speed and people starting to use it more.
I think that it has, but really there was nothing better for the etiquette business than when we came out of COVID. You know, I mean, everything changed. So many things were changed. I mean, whether it's from worker shortages and changes in tipping to going back to work, doing all those kinds of things. I mean, I can't think, of course, I haven't been in etiquette for 50 years, but what a lucky time. I mean, I always, again, optimistic, but you know, what an amazing thing to live through, and to see it, how it really influenced so many aspects of our life and changed the way that we did things.
So there are some universal things. So we're switching around here, but it's just every time you say something's going through my mind. Like, being late is a universal, don't be late. It's not just an etiquette thing. It's being respectful of someone else's time. Would you agree with that?
Yes. And, you know, that can vary culturally as well. So sometimes somebody else's late is not your late. So it's good to be in touch with those norms.
Yeah. Let me just, cause that gets into, like, if the meeting starts at 1:20, well, let's just say 1:30, there's no, I mean, reality is 1:30 is 1:30 at that time zone and the equivalent. So late would be 1 minute after 1:30. Do we agree on that?
Yes. Yes. But so I used to live in Peru. And so you would meet somebody in Peru. You'd say you're going to meet at 7 o'clock for dinner. If you both showed up by 9, you were doing really well. It is just a different culture of when it comes to being on time and lateness. And that's one of those things that can vary, one of those manners that can vary depending on where we are. So I think when it comes to business, we're all on time. Time means time. The last one there is the one who's late. So you need to be there 5 to 10 minutes ahead of time is always a good thing. But on time is perfect. And that's universal through, but more socially and culturally, it can vary just a little bit.
So that's why it's even more important to find that in your company. When we say 1:30 Pacific time, we mean 1:30 Pacific time, not 2 o'clock Pacific time. That's a lot of work, but you really do have to define that. I mean, and you probably have to use scenarios like case studies, right?
Yeah. And a lot of times when I'm doing classes, we will go through these scenarios. So we'll say, you have an 11 o'clock meeting and it's still going strong at 10:45, and you have another meeting following it. What can you do? What would you have done differently to begin with? And I think that training is so important on the front end with employees, just to have them thinking about these scenarios and things that they can do. But then you say, this is the expectation in our company and this is how we're going to operate. And how much easier is it to do that a few times than to deal with the aftermath multiple, on a daily basis?
Yeah, I don't disagree. I was having a conversation with someone, Christy, recently about startups. And one of the big things that seems to be popping up is around HR issues. And HR issues in many ways are manners and etiquette. I mean, there's laws, of course, but there's also HR. It's not a gray area, but there's gray items where there's no necessarily right or wrong. It's someone's life experience that they're bringing to the situation with an expectation that they expect, and then they're disappointed, shocked, or something else. It's like someone saying, "Oh, well, I'm so offended by that you said that to me, Christy." Well, being offended really isn't the other person's fault. I mean, unless you gave me your manual, it's really on you. What would you say about that?
A lot of these little manners that we talk about don't necessarily rise to that HR level, but they can. And you think about somebody's experience and, you go to work and somebody is rude to you that week, which happens to 50% of people who work. They witness something that's rude. And then somebody else doesn't return your email. And then somebody else is late. And then all of those things accumulate and it does turn into an HR issue. And it turns into a your job satisfaction issue. And it turns into a culture issue. And so I think that we can always do our best to try not to say offensive things, but also when it happens and we do, being in tune with somebody enough to know, hey, that was off base, offer up that apology. If you're genuinely sorry, then tell people you're sorry. It doesn't mean that you always have to be right. It just means that you always have to be willing to look at how you impact a situation. And that's really, I think, the key to this. And if you can have the thought to just look at the situation and look how you impact it, look how what you can say or how you can act can change the situation. Because we all do that. We all affect the situation when we're in it. And now do we want to have that positive effect or do we want to have a negative effect? And it doesn't mean that we're going to be perfect when we do that, but it means that we're going to be human and that we're going to do our best. And when we screw up, we're going to admit it and we're going to say we're sorry.
Oh my God, Christy, do you know how most people can't do that? They don't do that, do they?
Well, that's why I think that it's so important to look at this and to look at how you are, again, impacting that situation. I think, yes, we all want to be right and we all think that we're right. But if you can have kind of that, just the perspective that, okay, well, how did I change the situation? How could I have done something differently? That self-awareness, it's not that common that we see self-awareness all around us. But for those who do, I can say that it will not only make other people's life better when you're self-aware, it's going to make your life a whole lot better when you're self-aware.
I don't disagree. That took me like, I don't know, probably getting into my late 30s or 40s before I could focus on being self-aware. I was just trying to figure out the whole world at that point.
Yeah. And that's the thing is when we are on Planet Me and we're thinking about ourselves, what's happening to me, what's being said about me, 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 that's when it's really hard to take in those other things and to look around us and to kind of have that perspective. But it's again, when we get off of Planet Me and we start thinking about other people, we can kind of start thinking about these things. And heck, I'm glad that it happened in your 30s because there's people who it doesn't happen for.
Well, I think it happened earlier. I'd be honest with you. I think it happened to me in grade school mainly because I went to a school where we wore a uniform. There was etiquette. There was manners. There was a way you talked to an adult. And there was definitely a way you didn't. You didn't use swear words. You didn't do those types of things. It just was inappropriate. And it wasn't that I think that somebody had a manual necessarily, but you were quickly corrected if you did something and you sort of learned that way. And to go back here just a few minutes, because I didn't want to be rude and interrupt you, but how do I even know if I'm being rude? If I don't have a definition of what rude is, because rude to me may be different than rude to you. I mean, and what I meant with the HR stuff is that this etiquette and manners is almost becoming an HR issue. Who else in the organization would define manners, politeness, and etiquette? Because like you said, those things are the trigger. They're not a trigger. They're the events that happen that make it get to an HR. So it's almost as if HR function is now starting to encompass this idea around etiquette, because if you offend someone in their world, whatever that means, they could, it becomes an HR issue. I mean, it's the HR is doing all the human relations type of interactions, not just payroll and legal things.
Yeah. I mean, God bless them. I mean, they're in their position. Everyone's problem is now your problem. So not an enviable position to be in. But I think if you consistently have problems with people, if people you think are consistently rude to you, you might want to take a look at yourself. I think that's a real good sign that you might be the problem. And so it really, I mean, if you can look at how people are reacting to you, and it's easy to see. You'll see somebody who in the morning, they make a Facebook post and blah, blah, blah. It's all wrong. And you know, they're a serial Facebook updater and this person cut them off and this happened and this happened. And you kind of want to say, you know what? Maybe it's you. And so I would say if you are heading home at the end of the day and your frustration level is at a 10 and you've had interactions all day long that don't seem right, it's time to look in the mirror. And, you know, when you're pointing that finger at somebody else, look at the ones pointing back at you. And I think that that's a good time to think, you know what? Maybe it's not everybody else. Maybe it's me.
That's like, I mean, now, this is really crazy because it almost gets into that you're becoming a psychologist. I mean, because people need this self-help. This episode is sponsored by the Halle Financial Team at Expert Lending. Buying a house in today's market is competitive, and you need a lender that can close fast and get you the very best rate. The team is licensed in 48 states and has over 20 years experience in the real estate and lending space and access to lending rates that most mortgage brokers can't get. I know because I'm an investor in the team. If you need a mortgage or know someone that does, call or text Kara at 571-271-9086 and talk to a real human who will give you the customer service you deserve. Again, call or text Kara at 571-271-9086. 9086. Now back to the show.
Yeah. Well, and I love to do that because a lot of this is confidence. And what I tell people are these are the little rules that you learn. How to do an email, what fork to use, all of those things. These are easy rules. Learning how to properly use, please, thank you, I'm sorry, excuse me, those kinds of things. So simple to do, but they make your life so much easier when you do learn how to use them well. So it does get into a little bit of psychology, but the best part of that is knowing those rules and learning this and becoming self-aware really leads to a sense of confidence that people might not have experienced before. And it doesn't mean that you think that you're suddenly great at everything and you're the most interesting person and you're the great conversationalist and you're going to be invited to every party. It just means like a certain level of self-satisfaction to know that you're doing the best that you can.
What fork do you use? You work from the outside in or the inside out?
You work from the outside in. If you have a salad fork, you start with that one with the salad.
What side's the knife supposed to go on?
Your knife goes on the right side. So you got your forks, your salad fork, and then your main fork, your plate, and then your knife, and then your spoon. And so here's a pro tip. If you think of the word forks laid out on the table in front of you, you'll never forget how to set the table. So you visualize the F on the left-hand side, and there's your forks. The O is for the plate that goes in the middle. The R is a reminder to put the knife blade towards the plate. So that's your K. And then your S is for your spoon. I don't know if that translates to podcast land, but in my mind, this makes sense.
Well, it does help. What happens if you put the fork and knife on one side? Is that even appropriate or right?
The problem with that is that you run the risk, especially if you're having other people at the table, that they're going to grab somebody else's fork. And so really the worst sin that this is that you're going to confuse people and it's going to cause an awkward moment. And when we are practicing good etiquette, we're there for the other people and we're trying to make the interactions as smooth as possible. So we don't want to kind of trick people into taking somebody else's fork or knife or getting things confused. But really, when those kinds of things happen, you show the best etiquette by just saying, oh, excuse me, can we trade knives? Or excuse me, can I get a new fork? And just really kind of underplaying things and making the best out of some of those little faux pas that we do.
So the fork and knife should never be on the same side ever.
In informal settings, it can be. So if it's just you and your family or it's an informal setting and there is no spoon, you can get all sorts of configurations. But I like to use the forks example as kind of the standard. You're not going to go wrong with that one.
No, I understand. Yeah, because I put the fork and the knife on one side and because we only use two utensils, even when guests come. So I was really wondering if that's technically a very casual thing. Sounds like.
And, you know, a lot of times people think they have to set the table with the spoons and the yada, yada. If you're not going to use it, no need to put it on the table.
Yeah, I even go more informal, Christy. I just put the pile of forks and knives and plates and say, serve yourself so that you can get your own amount of food.
And I think that as long as everybody knows what's expected, you're in good shape.
I want to go back to business real quick. Who hires you when you get hired? Is it an HR person? Is it a COO? Is it a CFO? Is it a manager? Who reaches out and says, hey, we need this. We got to call Christy.
It's typically a manager. And, you know, sometimes these are 911 emergencies. So we're getting ready for an event or an event has happened. There's been a problem. We've recognized this and we need some training. Or sometimes I just like to be there when we're, you know, talking about workplace culture and we're onboarding people and we're just kind of setting those basics, which I don't know if you went to college, if they, you know, had an etiquette school there, but a lot of them don't. And it doesn't necessarily matter what your major is. There's a good chance you've never had an etiquette class. There's a good chance that you have a lot of anxiety when it comes to eating in front of people. And it is, if you haven't been caught before that first job is really the place. And we used to think that these were things that parents were going to always teach people and teachers were going to teach people. And it's just not the case. We don't have that luxury of necessarily having those family dinners every night and having those behaviors modeled for us. And so By the time you've got that first job, though, it's time for that employer to step in if they need to step in, because you're now representing them. And that's important.
I have seen some of that. I sort of say it's like getting a puppy, right? The puppy just doesn't know their manners yet. And I think years ago, that wasn't true. And I'm open to saying everybody, when they start to get older, thinks that blah, 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 right? I don't want to be that person. But it does feel like that that wasn't the case 20 years ago, that people showed up and knew some level of politeness, whether that was hello, thank you, ma'am, sir. I don't even know if they do that anymore, but that's how we were. We grew up with, you didn't talk to an older person. You would say, sir. That's what we were taught by not a class, but by repetition, because there was just that rotation of the older students to the younger students. So, but now you see it that people actually don't know that they're putting their arms on the table. They're eating in front of cameras. They're not taking, is it right to take off your hat inside a building?
Yes. I mean, it depends on the impression that you want to make. And I have a 26-year-old son. And the other day I was in an article, it was about wearing headphones at work. And so it was a really hot button. It was in the Sunday Times in London ran the article. And so I asked him, I said, what would you do if you couldn't wear headphones, or should you wear headphones? And he honestly said, I think I'd look for another job if they said I couldn't wear headphones. And I thought, oh my gosh, I can't imagine, you know, so things definitely change generationally. But again, I said, like, if you want to make the best impression. And so he goes, oh, if I want to make the best impression. And for me, I'm going, well, why would you be there if you didn't want to make the best impression? You know, I mean, you're making that impression all the time. So if you want to make the best impression, take your hat off when you enter a building.
For men, but women are allowed to wear their hats.
There's a difference for women, and there's a difference if it's a fashion hat versus a baseball cap or a utility type hat. So for a woman, if it's a fashion hat, you can keep it on. But honestly, if it is a fishing hat or a ball cap, you're technically supposed to take it off when you enter a building.
How do you address people? So I had this happen. I said something about somebody not taking off their, a male not taking off their hat. And I wasn't correcting. I was just making a comment in a conversation. And the comment from the person was, it's like, we're not conforming. We're not going to conform to the establishment. Like, why would you make this person conform to the establishment? And I was like, I don't really think I'm making the person conform. But then I started thinking to myself, am I? Like, am I? You know, what is the establishment? So then we get into this, we're going to have to, I let it go, obviously, Christy, because we're going to have to get into this deep discussion of what is the establishment? How should we treat one another? How does that get translated into wearing a hat inside a building, et cetera? But how do you address that? Because I can't imagine you don't hear some of that, right? Like, hey, Christy, I'm going to wear my headphones. I'm not going to conform to these standards of the establishment trying to dictate to me what I do.
Well, and I hear this all the time. And this might have to do with hair color. It might have to do with piercings, tattoos, you know, and I'm always like walking on those eggshells when I start to say this, but I'm always going to say it. So here's kind of the example that I give is that this is our billboard. People are driving by it all day long. We're out there for the public to see, and people are going to judge us. And we don't get to explain that billboard. We don't get to say, yeah, but you know what? I didn't have time this morning and I couldn't do my hair. And then I decided, you know, it was really just best to wear my pajamas. We don't get to explain that away. It's a billboard. We're going to judge it. We're going to look at it as we're going by. And so what do you want on it? And really, again, that self-awareness of knowing, hey, if I take my hat off and I comb my hair, I'm going to look a lot better than the other people who don't, but I'm also going to show what else do I know? Or I mean, conversely, if you don't know to take your hat off when you go to a business meeting, what else do you not know? I think that you're opening that up. So I tell people, it's your billboard. You get to put whatever you want on it, but people are going to judge it as they drive by.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. you either want to play the game or change the game. And you do have to make a choice. And if you want to change the game, understand what changing the game means. I'm not saying that that's a bad cause. I'm just saying there's a consequence. And I think that's what you're saying is you are a billboard. So if you want to live by that, then understand you will suffer the consequences, whether you like them or not, or whether they're philosophically right or wrong. I had a friend of mine whose son just entered the workforce. He actually works for a Silicon Valley company, and his hair was, he went to a good college, got a good job, but his hair, and he's an engineer, and his hair is just like long and raggedy. And his dad, who's a good friend of mine, said, "Hey, you should cut your hair." And he's like, "Well, I'm not going to cut my hair. I'm an engineer and this is my expression." And really had to explain to him that if you cut your hair and you look and you look clean and you look taken care of, then people will, for better or for worse, whatever it is, will interpret it as you are together. But if your hair is long and raggedy and looks like you didn't wash it, then you will suffer the consequences of people judging you, and that will hurt you. In it, especially in a corporate environment. The corporate environment is a great, I mean, I worked in the corporate environment. I didn't last long. I opted out before I got fired, really, probably. Not to say I didn't do my job, but it was just not, there is a structure of which you do things there. And sometimes those things get perpetuated, not for the best thing, like butts in seats, right? And bad things like that. But if you want to work there and you want to get that more guaranteed income, then you have to play by those rules. And if you don't, you're probably going to get fired. I mean, or you're going to get ousted, right?
Yeah, I think that's important. But I also think if you're a kid, you're coming out of college and you have long hair, I tell people you don't have to cut it. Make every effort to minimize whatever you have going on. Having that self-awareness to know just to minimize it. Let people get to know you, because it's amazing how much capacity, hopefully, that we have for other people once we get to know them. We might think, oh my gosh, whatever they're wearing or however they look on that first impression. But when then they're capable and they're likable and they're a good employee, we can start to let a lot of things go. And so, but I'm just have that self-awareness when you're making those first impressions that you're going to make a first impression, and even knowing how to minimize things with piercings and, you know, how you're dressed and those kinds of things really just shows a maturity on that part to know that people are going to make assumptions about you based on the way that you look. This is natural. And should we, in a perfect world? No. But we would be fighting evolution for however long it's been to not make judgments about people.
I think these conversations are, I think they've been taken out of context, Christy. I tell my, you know, people are like, oh, well, being a racist is a very different thing than being stereotyping people, in my mind. That, you know, one race better than another, we're all human. So let's just throw that out of the argument, because that's easy and a very extreme situation and is wrong. But everybody stereotypes people. My wife does dog training. She does dog agility. Everybody says that the border collie people are a certain way and the poodle people and Jack Russell people are someone else, or the people who ride specialized bikes are a certain person from a person that does DeRosa. I mean, we inherently as humans gather around people we perceive as like-minded people. And anyone who is, if a Jack Russell person goes into the border collie conversation or table, they stick out like a sore thumb. And if they voice their opinion, then they will get ousted for the most part. Like, it's not good or bad, like you said, but I told this, and I know my friend's son, I was like, you should cut your hair. You should definitely cut your hair. I'm not saying that you're compromising your worldview, what you feel, but if you don't, and I also don't disagree with your advice, but if you don't do that, you will have to overcome a bigger hurdle. So do you want to do that, or do you want to make it easier for yourself to assimilate, which then they cringe, but because you are going to have to assimilate. You chose to take a job in a certain company with a certain group of principles or values with a group of people. So if you don't do that, you're just going to make it harder on yourself. If you want to wear all your piercings the first day and have green hair, Roger that, man. But you're going to really have created a very large hill to climb.
Yeah, it's an obstacle that I don't know that we all need that on the first day of our job. And I think that knowing how to tone it down says so much about the other things that you probably know and your maturity as well. But, you know, when you're thinking today, you're meeting an etiquette teacher. I'm sure that there were things that, you know, you're thinking, you know, pinkies up or whatever it's going to be. We all have those stereotypes about people. And usually when we go ahead and we meet somebody, we think, oh man, that wasn't exactly what I was expecting. And so, you know, I think that that's the case with everyone. We have something in our mind. And once we get to know them, then we just have more latitude for how we view them.
Yeah, I think more often than not, Christy, it doesn't happen because most people don't have confidence and they're too insecure. And unless you have ultimate confidence, it is very hard to accept another person as they are very different from you. I've always been attracted to it because I've been so curious. So I was the person who could hang out with the geeks, the jocks, the metalheads, the, you know, lacrosse player, the academics, the nerds, whatever, because I was always interested in that. And I was pretty confident in who I was. I mean, at some level, everybody has insecurity, right? But if you are insecure and you don't have that confidence, it's very hard to accept another person because you're not even accepting yourself.
Yeah, you're right. It does make it tough to do. But man, that's why this exploration of ourselves and other people is so important. And so, again, just thinking about other people and thinking about how they operate in the world and how they see the world, you know, that was one of the biggest things that I learned that I wasn't sure that I was going to. When I started etiquette training, I was like, I want to know the rules. I am tired of being in these awkward situations. My life is just like on candid camera all the time. And I wanted to know the rules. And then like the first thing they teach you is it's not about the rules. And I'm like, dang it. Well, I've already paid the money. So that was my stereotype. That's what I thought I was going to be doing. I was just going to be jotting down these rules and then smooth sailing through all of my social interactions. And that's not what it was about. And so it's good when those perceptions change.
Yeah, I think it's really about, I tend to, even when people meet me, I've learned to give the framework and expectation, meaning, you know, if you and I are going to have we're doing a discussion here, which I did preface you on, but if I was going to have a discussion with someone else and we had just met, I would say, hey, do you really want to have this discussion? Because I'm going to tell you, if we're really going to have this discussion, you're going to perceive me as extremely intense and I'm going to push it all the way to the limit because I'm actually interested in getting insight into this idea. But if you're just saying it just as passing, tell me because I don't understand the difference. And that way they're prepared. And I tell people who all meet me that up front too, like, I'm going to be very intense. You're going to perceive me as very intense. And I'm going to be that intense because I want to do good either for you, with you, however we're working. And that way it just sets the expectation. And what I feel like with this etiquette manner stuff is in today's day and age, because there are such things vary that we really do need to define those for people so that they understand what they are expected to do. You know, they do this in the military really well. I mean, they have a book, literally, right? They put you through boot camp. You will stand up straight. You will put your arms here. You will do this. You will stand this way. You will say this. You won't say that. Now, you could argue that that's some sort of indoctrination, which it, you don't have to argue it. It is indoctrination into a cult. but you generally choose to be indoctrinated into those things. The same thing that way that you do when you join a company. So I think if we were able to define that, and it makes me think, like, for the company we have we defined that in a way that, other than course correcting along the way, like, wouldn't it be better for them just to get a book up front? Here's our expectations as it relates to how you will act and treat other people.
And I think that those standards and the expectations are great. But what a human can bring to that is the why behind it. So just somebody up here, there's kind of a popular etiquette things, you know, people will be on social media and they'll wag their finger in front of somebody else and say, don't do it this way, do it that way. And I, if you ever catch me doing that, that's not the kind of etiquette that I teach. So I think there's just so much value in saying, here's how we answer the phone. Because when we do it this way, it promotes X, Y, and Z. Not just lay down the law. Here's how you do it. You're going to do it because I said to do it, and ruler on the knuckles kind of thing. But I think that explain to people where other approaches can fail and why they can fail and why this is the preferred way to do it. Not just that this is the preferred way to do it, but what the outcome of that might be.
Yeah, you seem to, and I did, Kim, I thought you were going to come with a bunch of rules and I'd just be able to ask you what you did do with the silverware. So, but those don't necessarily change, right? Those are, I mean, if you want to abide by long-standing etiquette, then that's sort of how that works. But what I think it sounds like and feels like you teach is more self-awareness and treating humans as I hesitate. I got corrected for this the other day. So here you go. I got corrected, Christy, for saying, treat other people the way you want to be treated, because someone unpacked that and said, well, shouldn't you treat people how they want to be treated? And I was like, well, I don't know. Unless they give me the book, then I really can't do that. And then am I conforming to what their worldview is? And they're using that to create another worldview. Like, doesn't this get confusing?
It is confusing, but that's the human experience, you know, and that's what we tell the, you know, the golden rule and then the platinum rule is to treat other people the way that they want to be treated. And sometimes we don't know that for other people. And if we go around assuming that we know it for other people, we're right back where we were to begin with. So I think sometimes that means asking people what that means for them. So I'm all about the platinum rule. I'm all about it. But wait, the only way we know that...
I want to make sure, sorry to interrupt you. The platinum rule is treat other people how they want to be treated or how you want to be treated?
How they want to be treated.
Well, that just seems like, yeah, that's a failing strategy.
Right. And so you only know that when you get to know the person and you get to know how they do want to be treated. I mean, and sometimes that's hard. So you're a text person. I'm an email person. Well, it's hard for me to always remember that you're an email person or you like to be called at this certain time and not something else. You have to learn that for the people that are important in your life. You need to speak their language. But other than that, man, if we did operate at that golden rule level about treat other people the way you want to be treated, I think we're pretty good. I mean, that platinum rule is definitely the next level to that. And I think that that can be applied to some of those really important relationships in your life, but might be exhausting to apply to every relationship in your life.
What if how they want to be treated I don't agree with?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess you have you're stumping me here. You are.
I'm just saying, if they say or they, I learn or they tell me to treat them in a way that fundamentally I do not agree with, that could be religious views, that could be worldview, that could be spiritual, that could just be like human nature view, whatever you want to call it. Should I comply with that? Because isn't that forced compliance?
Well, I mean, I think that we've agreed that forced compliance is going to come into play in some of these situations. But I think, man, the only examples I can think of this, I really can't say on the radio. And so I guess the default is go to the way that you would want to be treated. But I mean, as long as that's not hurting the other person or not doing something that's fairly easable.
You can say anything on a podcast.
I can't. I mean,
You physically can't? But what if
I have this reputation to uphold here?
But I want you to treat me as a person that you could share that with. So you see the dilemma here.
I do. And I'm going to hold my ground and I'm going to keep those thoughts to myself. But yeah, I think you default. And again, make people feel cared for. If it's something easy that you can do, fine. If you find it too exhausting or too much out of your realm of being able to think, you're probably not going to have, you know, a great relationship with that person anyway. So bare minimum with the golden rule.
Yeah, I think people are weaponizing the platinum rule in our society. And they're basically saying, you need to treat me this way because I've decided that you're going to treat me this way. And if you don't treat me this way, then you're offending me. And then they'll actually call you other names. And that's forced compliance. And it's weaponizing it, and it leaves you in a zero-sum game. And maybe the answer is maybe I read too much into it, so that's my intensity. But it is a tactic to get your way. And it's what some people use to force function their view in either a group, a company, or somewhere else. I mean, it is a real tactic. So you find yourself in this no-win situation. And I see that more often, not more often than not, but I see it a lot more being used, especially across the internet and whatnot. And then it turns into this, like, nobody wins. So that's what it perplexes me.
Well, and I think that if we can do both, we're really well off. And I think most of us are just so happy when somebody treats us like a person and with dignity and with some respect that I think most of us would be happy with that. You know, I don't know. I'm not as round as picky people as you are.
Well, I'm not even picky. I mean, I'm on the internet a lot. So, I mean, I grew up, my first company was a social networking site. So I, like in the early days in 1996. So I'm probably more used to, and especially owning the site and being quote unquote, like I call us like B-level celebrity, right? Within a group that you see the sort of feedback that can be given by people and how a group of people especially can weaponize these things to get their way. It's actually, I was looking it up because I always get it wrong, but it's a phenomenon where it's called intransigent minority can force function by doing this platinum rule, a worldview onto a majority of people. And it can become dangerous when that happens. And the problem is that people who follow the golden rule then get, it's like you can't make progress. So it's this weird thing that I've sort of been around it. And I don't know, where do you live?
I live in Joplin, Missouri. So smack dab yes. In the Midwest.
Yeah, I live in definitely here in Northern California. I just say California, in a place, I wouldn't say people are picky here, but we have a very, very eclectic, let's say, group of people in an area that can go from one end to the other. And with that, you find yourself probably, I find myself in more situations than you might be in the flyover states, which is the middle of the country, tends to have a rule book that is in general more consistent. I know that there's some exceptions, but would you agree with that?
I think so. But just where you live doesn't necessarily define who you're working with. And so we may live in one place and then we're interacting with people in different places or different cultures. And so I think that, you know, your exposure to it, but with the internet, we're all exposed to the same kinds of things. It's just kind of what you decide to pay attention to.
Yeah, it is. I gotta say, Christy, I feel better having talked to you so far today, but I still am, it's still confusing. I talked to my mom about it recently and she's like, well, at least you know, you have the best of all worlds. You're in California, so everybody's sort of free flowing and does things one way, but you were brought up in a culture that had more, God, what's the right word? A more standard set of etiquette and manners, and they were enforced and recognized more so and noticed. I mean, if you wore your hat and you wore your, I think that's probably the case for the most part on the East Coast, even though it's gotten more relaxed. If you wear your hat, if you're a man and you wear your ball cap in a restaurant and you're eating other than maybe a crab shack, it's probably noticed, or you wore it into church, you would notice that.
Yeah, there are still some of those places where, you know, it's still sacred. And like I said, it is getting more informal. But if we're smart, we use that to that advantage that we can have.
So what's a most recent thing that you came up with? Because we've talked a lot about everyday manners, but I think work manners are probably, whether listeners are working in another company or owning a company, trying to figure out, like, how do I navigate this? And I think one of the biggest things my takeaway from this conversation really is going back to that. Here's our, I don't know what you would call it, but here's our etiquette handbook. Here's how we see the world. And that's very different than an elevator pitch. It's very different than a mission statement. And it's very different than the principles of which we operate, that we communicate to customers. It's an internal doctrine of how we treat each other as humans.
And I think that, you know, it is great to have those things written down. It's great to explain the why behind those kinds of things, have, you know, someone like me to do that. But then it's all going to fall flat if the leadership isn't showing it on a daily basis. And so you have to model that. And that's the hardest thing to do, because we get stressed. We have all of these things. And when we get stressed, we look more inward. We don't self, you know, our self-awareness goes down. And then what happens when we do that? We're rude to somebody else. And then that person's stressed. And then it just keeps going and going and going. And so what you want to be able to do is stop that cycle before it starts. And that's not to say that there's not going to be negativity and there's not going to be problems within, but you have to say, we're the kind of organization who's going to talk about this. We're the kind of organization who is going to talk about how we treat people, how we perceive the golden rule and the platinum rule, how we're going to have gratitude. And that's an open conversation. And maybe we're going to evolve some things. So maybe casual Friday gets turned into every day. And that's what we've all agreed on. But I think you can change. It doesn't always have to be the same, but everyone has to know where they're starting from. I think that's only fair to your employees, because these are some of the easier things that we can teach and we can put on paper and we can model.
I agree. What was the most recent crisis that you had to go in and mitigate and fix?
Most of the requests that I'm getting nowadays are not about necessarily business etiquette, but about tipping and how that has changed.
Oh,
so that's
God.
Probably the number one subject that I get into. I just got off a phone call with somebody who, you know, had an issue. And a lot of times it is kind of that psychology where people kind of, you know, want to know, like, please tell me I was right when I did this. And so sometimes my job is to say, yeah, or no, that might not be the thing to do. But really, I think professionalism is probably the number one business, and that encompasses so many things. But I think that we are really dealing with how we come across to other people and how we're showing professionalism. And again, huge subject, but the way that you carry yourself and your image has so much to do with that. And I think that that's the number one thing right now is post-pandemic. We're all real casual. We're all, you know, some of us are staying at home and working like that. And I think that companies want to bring a level of professionalism back.
Well, before I get there, do you want to hear what my theory on tipping is?
I would love to.
Here's what's happened, in my opinion. All of these apps now are generalized. So they have the Stripe screen at a carryout. They have the Stripe screen at I'm using Stripe. It could be Square or something else. I don't have any interest in, well, maybe I own Square or Stripe. Anyway, doesn't matter. They have all these screens. Every single screen has a tip screen. And when I go to take carry out, I'm probably not going to tip. And it actually I'm saying me, but I've talked to some other people about this, as you might believe, and now talking to me for 50 minutes that I would do that. But I have surveyed people, and it makes people angry that people would ask to get a tip when I'm picking up the food or in establishments that just doesn't make sense. And I think the theory was either someone didn't know how to set the default checkout screen correctly in configuring the system, or people thought that they could get extra income if they presented the screen. And what's happened is a backlash. So now, I mean, humans are predictable animals. They're, once you create the behavior or habit, it is very hard to break it. So now we've established this, it's not a trigger as in what they talk. It's an event that creates a behavior or a feeling. So the event is you see the tip screen. You've been so mad because more often than not, you probably aren't in a situation where you need the tip. You're in more often situations that don't require the tip, but have presented the tip. And then you're just like, I'm not tipping anymore. This is ridiculous. And it's not because the person didn't do a good job or something else. It's that you just have this reaction. And I think that's what happened. I think people got sick of tipping.
Yeah, we're definitely tired of tipping. And I think that here's the worst thing that can happen out of it is that we have interactions. And if you're behind the counter at a food place, you might be having hundreds a day, but those add up, you know. And for me, maybe I'm just having a couple a day. But the worst thing that can happen at the end of a human interaction is to be confused and when we're supposed to be grateful. And so I learned a great tip where if this is not a service that you would normally give a tip for and you don't, and takeaway is kind of one of those gray areas now. The tipping percentage is higher than it used to be. It's so confusing. I mean, and is it people making less than minimum wage, or is it anybody who performs a service for you? I mean, I think this is a huge etiquette area that we can evolve from. But the worst thing you can do is end that interaction with your questioning or your feeling taken advantage of, as opposed to just looking the person in the eye, saying, thank you, have a nice day, and leaving. And so I think that there's a huge backlash of people who are becoming less grateful in that interaction because of the confusion that we have over tipping. And I think that that is a huge shame. And I also think you can change those prompts on the screen. I think that it's really becoming out of control. And maybe we need to pay people a living wage, you know, this whole other million podcasts, but do that. But something's got to change before we're all going around ungrateful, confused, and, you know, feeling taken advantage of.
Who's ungrateful, the customer or the server?
I think instead of saying thank you and have a good day, I think it's on the customer. You know, you don't feel grateful for the service that was just performed for you. You feel like, what the heck's going on here? I'm just confused. So I think when you don't give that tip, especially when you do give the tip, don't let it just be money. Make sure that it's a look in the eye. Thank you. That means I haven't been a server for a long time, but I gotta think that that's darn near as good as a tip, but not having share that outrage with you. I think that has to be exhausting for them.
Oh, I don't disagree, but I think that the waiters definitely, waitresses definitely want the tip, and they should want the tip. They don't get paid enough unless they are getting paid a salary, or which often isn't happening in restaurants. But I do think that they're suffering. So you did say the rule. Should you tip the house cleaner at a hotel?
Yes. So I think that some of those things do come into play. I think that it doesn't have to be a huge amount for somebody, but I think a little appreciation is helpful. But again, the lines are so blurry right now. I've had people question when they went to a dress shop. They were prom shopping for their child. They got to the end and it asked for a tip. That's not a place where we're used to tipping. And again, you just kind of like, you know, push a button or say no, or just kind of look at the person like, you know, what in the heck just happened? I don't think that's where we want to go. I think that we need some more clearer definition of lines of where we're tipping and where we're not, because right now it's a mess out there.
Well, I think what could happen is that it could just wind up being like Europe or Mexico or these other places where they just don't tip and they just walk away. And now that whole, the economics of a restaurant just changed. So I don't really know who's going to do that. Are you going to write a book or something so that you can standardize it?
I have a few more hours in the day today, so I'm going to get on that. But
no, I'm serious. Who's going to standardize this?
Well, I think people like Emily Post, you know, who have been the kind of standard, need to come out. But sometimes it's not easy to come out and say these things because it's not, manners aren't always popular. So probably somebody with a little more thicker skin than maybe than I would have. But I do, what I can tell people is don't become so callous and don't become ungrateful. That is a disservice to yourself. And that's going to hurt you more than it hurts anybody else. So keep being grateful. Keep giving a smile, giving that tip when you can and when it's expected and when it's traditional. And when you can't, just be nice.
Well, I think that's a good place to wrap things up. Other than if you were to give listeners just three etiquette, manners, politeness tips to guide them in their work and their personal lives, what three tips would you give them?
So the first thing is think before you act. People think that they have to act with immediacy and it has to be right in the moment. And sometimes a thoughtful person who takes a little time and considers the options is way better off. So think before you do anything. When you think about those choices, think about how they're going to impact that relationship. So which one's going to better the relationship? Which one's going to halt the relationship? How is it going to affect the relationship? And then the last one is whatever you choose to do, do it with sincerity. So when you go to shake somebody's hand and you made the decision past COVID, I'm shaking somebody's hand, put your hand out there and shake it, because there's nothing worse than somebody who does it half-heartedly or they're not sure about it. So think before you act, make those decisions that are going to help your relationships, and then do it with sincerity.
I love it. Where can people find you if they'd like your help?
I am at thepolitecompany.com. So that's the best way to find me. If you look up The Polite Christie on social channels, you'll find me, more advice than you ever probably wanted or needed, but I'm happy to help people.
Christie, this has been fun. Thanks a lot for coming on. I've learned a lot and I'm a little less confused.
Good, good.
Bye, everyone.